Hello, and welcome to the Psychedelic Psychiatrist Podcast, a podcast dedicated to the discussion around all aspects of psychedelic medicine. This is also a space that hosts conversations about impactful personal journeys and a way to decrease stigma around these molecules and share our experiences with one another. So get ready for some deep dives and fun times. I'm your host, Juan Pablo Galindo. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. Hope everyone's having a beautiful week out there. I'm very excited to introduce our next guest on the podcast. Her name is Christy Myers, and Christy was a professor and assistant director of emergency medical services at the Victor Valley College in California. She has worked previously as a paramedic at several agencies, including Department of Defense and the San Bernardino County Fire Department in California. And ultimately, her career has led into the psychedelic space. And Christy is the founder and CEO of Flow Integrative, a psychedelic wellness medical practice that helps clients become aware that they are aware, helps them expand consciousness, become aware of their inner unconscious patterns, and she helps people with their pain, addiction, and ultimately helps reduce suffering and promote growth. Another awesome part about her clinic, Flow Integrative, is that it made history last year by successfully piloting the first psychedelic insurance company known as Anthea. And so Christy will talk to us about this partnership with Anthea. And it was great to discuss some topics that are dear to this podcast, such as ketamine and psychedelics. And it was great talking about her journey and how she came to becoming the founder of this clinic, Flow Integrative. And I'm very grateful towards Christy for her vulnerability during this interview in sharing her personal story. So yeah, without further ado, I present my interview with Christy Myers. Well, Christy, the first question that I have for you, and I wanted to see if you would mind sharing your journey so far and how you came to this work and how you came to be a psychedelic assisted psychotherapist.
Yeah. And for clarity, my background isn't as a therapist. I spent the last 20 years as a professor and paramedic. I have therapists that I've hired that work in-house, but this creation, just so that, you know what I mean? So that we're clear.
Yeah.
I'm definitely trauma-informed. However, I'm not a licensed therapist.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is even more groovy of a story.
Yeah. So makes the story more interesting of how you came to be in this field.
Yeah. And there's two ways that I share it. One, so it always circles back on itself. However, to take it from like inception, if you will, goes all the way back to when I was 15 years old. I lost my dad to suicide. And not having any awareness in that time space of where it would have led me 27 years later. Shortly after that period of time, I found the fire service, or the fire service found me. I started in wildland fire, that was a really big growth period, meaning I started on the engine and I started working on helicopters. I really wanted to become a smoke jumper. Adrenaline is a common theme in this story. So mm-hmm. With that, I actually broke both my feet at the same time as I was training for that. And that transitioned into me working and doing a little bit of time in rehab with the National Weather Service. I used to sling weather for the FAA while my feet rehabilitated. That catapulted me into the medical side. So I shortly thereafter did my emergency medical technician or EMT basic. At the same time, I was doing the fire academy. So there's a few things that Wildland taught me, and that kind of pushed me into the municipal side of fire, where I spent 6 years as a firefighter with San Bernardino County, which is where I was born and raised. At that time, it was a mixture of fire as well as EMS, and just gaining the knowledge base to go to paramedic school. I was working at the time four jobs concurrently. So that was also part of the story of where and how psychedelics made their way and truly changed my life, was I was still in an avoidance area of just being busy and successful. And I loved being, it was also competition embedded in there as well too. All of those pieces then led into paramedicine. I finished my paramedic license in 2005. That opened doors. So I started working on the ground ambulances for American Medical Response, gaining enough time to then transition over to flight medicine. Concurrently, teaching became something that I also fell in love with. So on days off, I was still giving back. I was teaching as a skills instructor and doing my stuff for my undergrad and my grad to be able to transition into a more full-time position later on down the line. In that time frame, working for air rescue, I did a lot of time in flight. All of those pieces transitioned when I had my son and my daughter. So I stopped flying when I was 5 months pregnant with my son. He loves telling this story that he's been in flight right before he was even born. and that really changed a lot of who I was, in the sense that it was more geared towards how do I stay home more with the kids and still hold these roles. And so that transitioned into teaching in more of a full-time area, and then eventually going full-time. So I finished my undergrad and my grad, going into a full-time position as a professor, earning tenure in 2021.
All right.
Yes. And in that time frame, 2019 is where ketamine entered our drug box. And so just for a little bit of preface, anatomy, physiology, pharmacology, the theoretical side of medicine, as well as all the skills and simulations is what I was responsible for at my time with the college, in addition to some cardiology here and there as well too. But when ketamine entered, I found that I had my own judgments towards it. And I don't know where that came from. And at the time, I was really practicing Pygmalion in effect as far as the separation from judgment and just allowing attainment of the curriculum, but delivering information without myself being the standard and creating self-imposition for the students to receive achievership. So to start teaching ketamine, every time I presented it, I incorporated it into anatomy physiology, and this was just my practice to incorporate PHARM into A&P and carry it all throughout so that it didn't feel like it was just a season in their life, so that they continuously used medication and math throughout the entire program. And it just started making more and more sense of the gift that this medicine carries in a multitude of ways for the human being, more specifically, who helps the help. So there's a multitude of things that were happening in that time frame while I was earning tenure. I am a full-time mom, and so I was watching what that was doing with my kids as far as them adapting to also being in a single mom home and visitations with their dad, their mental health, my mental health. I was watching the students in my classroom also cascading as they carried these immense loads, trying to still work full time and earn money as well as rediscipline themselves into education. We had students that were attempting to take their life or were just really hitting rock bottom in these places. And so all these events compounding, and then you enter COVID. And so I transitioned, I created the first paramedic program to run fully online as a hybridized. We even did skills online in the state of California. It was really beautiful. Yeah. To allow them to not stop. I mean, this was a lot of their driving force or why they got up in the morning. And there was no way I was not going to give it everything I had to continue running this program or programs. So I was running the programs out of my bedroom and when my kids were homeschooling in the living room. And then it became really clear in March of 2020, right after COVID hit, I wasn't in the hustle anymore in the sense of doubleheaders on the weekends, the kids' sports schedules, running them back and forth to school, all the things that went along with just life. And at that same time, watching the mental health crisis, watching what was occurring and the systems that were starting to crumble and really seeing the holes, right? Or what we really didn't have time to become aware of, or perhaps we saw it, but didn't have any a means to an end. And that's when I started building Flow. It's just been a lock and key experience of this path unfolding in front of me to be able to be here now. Last year, we successfully piloted the first psychedelic insurance company, making history with Dr. Bronner's being our primary company and Entheia being the insurance company. It's one of the greatest honors I've been given as a creator was to create these protocols and successfully pilot this program. At the same time, also making a lot of headway for traditional insurance to cover this medicine as a primary means for mental health.
Amazing. Can we break those last two things down? So can you tell people like what is Flow?
Flow is the natural unfolding of life, of us as consciousness into our highest self. It is an integrative program. And so I created two avenues. One being a professional corporation. Again, I am not a physician. And so my partnership is with one of the longest physicians I've had the pleasure of working with. I met him when I was a brand new paramedic back in 2004. And he is my chief medical director. And so everything that has been created as a professional corporation is under his licensure. And then I have a organization for the management services of the professional corporation that allows us to run this front-facing clinic as this entity of Flow, within Flow also being the MSO, which is a really beautiful opportunity for physicians that are looking to work in this space to have a licensing piece to work under our organization, giving access to insurance and all of the back office that we've created for psychedelics to have an entry point into mainstream medicine with the practice of mental health being incorporated.
Wonderful. So so you have a brick and mortar clinic.
Yeah.
Where you're currently offering ketamine assisted psychotherapy.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. So in that practice, like what does the ketamine therapy look like under the umbrella of Flow? Like what does that look like with the therapists and the clients and the patients?
Yeah, we have a dual model in the sense that it's not strictly medical and it's not strictly mental health. So we have incorporated both. And it's a three-step process. You first meet with one of our therapists. So all of our therapists are licensed. And we have a multitude of options, or not options, but credentials. So we have LCSWs, we have LPCCs, we have a PhD as well, too. So there's something for everyone. And we do the initial diagnostic intake, and then that transitions over to a medical clearance, and then that transitions into working with the medicine. And that's something that we take on a really intimate, individualized case, because again, this is definitely not a one size fits all or a prescriptive of dosing. So we take into consideration the depth of trauma, the relationship to it, as well as if you've ever met your nervous system before, because those are all areas that we just need to be mindful of as people are learning how to go inward and understand themselves from a higher dimension or higher perspective.
Wonderful. So so it's tailored based on how one presents and their background, and really kind of like working in partnership with the person to introduce them to this type of work.
Yeah. Yeah, like for some, altered states of consciousness can be intimidating.
For sure.
Just for a little housekeeping piece on that, sleeping is an altered state of consciousness. So it's reframing our relationship with that word and reframing our relationship with the word psychedelic. I mean, psychedelic in totality means to make manifest. And so really it's one of those areas where that has created imposition. And so we're also working to soften those barriers and to become aware that we're aware.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you primarily work with like sublingual, intramuscular? Can I mean, like, how do you work with the medicine?
We work with it IV as our
primary. IV, okay.
Yeah. Sure. So we've trained our nurses across the board as well. My background with pharmacology, this is one of the areas that's very dear to me as far as the delivery systems and routes of entry. So IV is 100% as far as its bioavailability. And it also allows for a lot of safety in the sense we can slow it down, we can stop it. It really is beautiful to work with the medicine straight to source.
All right. Awesome. Yeah. You talked initially about when you like first heard of ketamine, and like you yourself had your own personal like misconceptions. And what's interesting is a lot of the whenever I post something about ketamine on my social media, there will inevitably be like a comment from someone and be like, "You're giving people a horse tranquilizer." Oh, yeah. Sure. And so I wanted to ask you, like, what are some misconceptions that people have about ketamine, some misinformation that you see on your end?
Yeah, absolutely. One, it's used for conscious sedation. So my initial imprint with this medicine was for conscious sedation. I worked in the emergency room. We used it all the time on kids. They do very well with this medicine. But the dosing structure is much higher than what we use in session. And so that was one of them. I'm like, what are we? Because again, we're using it as paramedics. I'm like, okay, so we're not doing conscious sedation or an RSI procedure. So where ketamine came in for pain management is how we were utilizing and giving it. So there was that side of it. And then I also worked in an area where ketamine was seen recreationally, right? And so you have these paradigms where you're doing it for conscious sedation, you're using it for little kids, and then you're seeing it abused on this end, and really then starting to understand all of its routes of entry and the formulations. So we utilize ketamine hydrochloride. You have ketamine R, you have ketamine S. So there's different formulations or polymer chains that have been created for this medicine. And where the horse tranquilizer comes in is absolutely in truth. I mean, we use this medicine across the board, even for sentient animals. But where they're using it is the ketamine R and ketamine S, to where that then gets broken down. So it's if you were to paradigm shift over to, we can use methamphetamine for an example, or cocaine for an example. Each person that's making those medicines or drugs, they all have a different algorithm. Some use Drano to clear it. Some use urine. Some use gasoline. And so what are they using to break it down? It's the same principle of street ketamine or recreational ketamine. Yes, it's coming from the veterinarian side of medicine, but it's being broken down by somebody, and you don't know if it's being mixed. It's kind of the same thing with MDMA or ecstasy, right? If you're getting it on the street, there's a potential that they've mixed it with something. As a filler or as an additional piece. Right now there's a fentanyl crisis, right? They're putting it in everything. They're putting it on Xanax bars. So that side of it is the recreational side. And when we're consuming medicine recreationally or consuming ketamine, in this case recreationally, a lot of those times it's still for escapism. It's not an intentional journey to go inward and explore your mind, breaking down barriers to entry or becoming aware of your unconsciousness. And so there's really taking a step back and asking why we have those judgments or where we were influenced by it, that we now have this prejudice against this medicine that's been around for over 50 years. If we were to go to the emergency room for our kids, if they broke their arm, we wouldn't even think twice if they used ketamine. And they use a very large amount very quickly that creates this disassociation from the physical body to where we can snap bones back in place. Mm-hmm. That's completely normal. And so it's like, okay, why have we normalized it here, but we're not normalizing it here? And then there's a rapid induction with the medicine in the ER. It's given very quickly. Here, we're allowing it to be given over a longer period of time, close to an hour, which allows you to understand what it's like to drop in to the medicine, expand, separate from your body, and to start becoming aware of the mind. It's truly a gift, and its dosing structure is the variable, just like with all medicine.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you for sharing that.
For sure.
So a lot of times people, when they're seeking this type of treatment, they'll ask if we provide like psilocybin therapy, and we'll have to educate people that at this time, you know, psilocybin's still like schedule one, but there's FDA trials going on to hopefully reschedule psilocybin. But they'll also ask, you know, like, what are the differences between ketamine and psilocybin? I think most of the documentaries out there, like on Netflix, like psilocybin is kind of like one of the main ones they talk about. So when people will Google psychedelic therapy, they have in mind like working with psilocybin. So then they end up finding me, that's ketamine.
Yeah.
Assisted psychotherapy. And then they ask, but I just wanted to hear what your take is on that. Like, what would you say when people ask you the difference between the two? Like, what's your answer?
Absolutely. Ketamine works at the limbic system, and it separates from the initial imprints where the limbic locks in trauma, also known as the default mode network, or those initial imprints or searing of these neural circuitries or pathways from imprints of events, right, wrong, or indifferent, right? And it could be as simple as seeing a spider and reactions when you were a kid, how that gets imprinted into the mind. And so this medicine starts separating the limbic system, which houses the amygdala and the hippocampus, which are two main areas in the brain that store emotions, memories, fear. I mean, you name it. We can even show now that those regions enlarge with trauma and are continuously engaged, which then keeps our nervous system in hurry and worry and speed and aggression. And so as we're working with ketamine, it's separating the limbic system, dissolving those networks, giving our brain and body access points to create new circuitry. That new circuitry is new ways of thinking, being, and doing, which you didn't ordinarily have. It also allows the body to go into a restorative state. Rhythms start to return and homeostasis starts to become more of an area where the body is naturally able to go into it, whereas before the body thinks it's continuously in survival. Whereas psilocybin's main ingredient is dimethyltryptamine. Dimethyltryptamine is abundant in our body. It's abundant in breath. It's abundant in mind. It's abundant in breast milk. It's initially inserted into the pineal gland at 49 days in utero. That's when consciousness is initiated, gender is specificated, and DMT becomes this really beautiful endogenous consciousness that embodies our cells. Whereas mushrooms have an MAO component, which activates it in saliva. DMT ordinarily is inhaled, whereas in this case, the mushrooms are able to be broken down with saliva and then consumed. And so the variable is the strain, is the strength, the active ingredient being psilocin, and then there's liver that comes into the equation because we're chewing and swallowing, even if we're microdosing in capsules. So the dose becomes something very intimate to each person. Again, it's important. For some, they're just grabbing a gob. Others are trying to measure it. Others are following here, here, and here, right? For each person, is the variable. Our trauma's different, our brains are different, all the things have different indications. And so when working with mushrooms, it allows you to see reality and these experiences of going in and out of your own mind movie. If you look at scans of the brain, everything is heightened and engorged, meaning you're firing on all circuits, right? So it's creating all of this new areas of plentifulness for you to be able to capture and to have a self-reflection. Again, set and setting's crucial. For some, if they grab a large amount of mushrooms and they engage in activities, they're still putting all of their energy outwardly and not necessarily going inward. So again, the variable is how you're working with the medicine, the intentionality behind it, the amount. And so that's where it becomes variable. But the main difference is the dimethyltryptamine, whereas ketamine is a polymer chain of things that are inertly in us as human ingredients. And ketamine can even be found in nature, in fungi, but it's more specific to the limbic brain, whereas psilocybin's engorging the cortex, which then gives you all these vantage points of heightened blood flow, engorgement.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, love so much the intricacy of your answer.
Thank you.
So thank you for sharing that. With that study that recently came out where they found like the ketamine and the fungi, a bunch of a colleagues joke that now we can say that we practice a form of plant medicine.
Totally. Totally.
With the inevitable future of other psychedelics coming on board with FDA approval, hopefully sometime soon in the future, what do you see ketamine's role like alongside of these? So have MDMA, psilocybin, how do you see ketamine like fitting in like that lineup, and what makes it unique compared to those others in terms of like use? Just your thoughts there.
Ketamine's half-life is 45 minutes. With IV administration, it can be up to 2.5 hours intramuscularly or sublingually, right? And so ketamine is a beautiful entry point. If you've never met your nervous system, if you've never experienced psychedelics, especially utilizing this medicine IV, it gives such autonomy over your ability to slow it down or turn it off as your nervous system is surfacing. You're becoming aware that you're aware. You're working with your own self. And so that becomes something really intimate in the sense that you're able to start understanding altered states of consciousness. You're able to have more autonomy over the flow, whereas psilocybin is a 4 to 6 hour commitment. So is MDMA. And so this is a smaller window of opportunity for you to start to have self-discovery. At that same time, it's really beautiful for working with the root, meaning we're able to really start to see some of those core memories or dissolving that default mode network and shutting down the excitatory side of the neurons, allowing the inhibitory side to start to populate, giving these access points for new perceptuals. And so it's dosed appropriate. And in that sense, it makes room for you to start working with your heart. How many barriers do we have in front of us that we've blocked off our heart with, right? And a lot of that stems from the initial root trauma. If we're able to move through the root and open up that trauma, then it gives us better access points to initiate the heart as a center of magnificence. This is the magnet, right? And our heart is so important to operate from. However, if we've never understood that, then we have a little bit of work to do before we can get to that point, which then opens the door so incredibly for psilocybin to heighten all of those senses. And MDMA and psilocybin being such beautiful higher dimensions, not saying that you can't start with them. Just starting is a feat in itself sometimes, right? But if you really want to gently step your way into this medicine or work with the medicine, ketamine is a beautiful starting point. And I believe it's really important for root.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Like, how would you explain that ketamine allows for one to, like, change their perspective? That's another thing that people ask, like, how does this allow me to view things differently where I'm not able to do this in, like, regular, like, long-term therapy is a question people ask me.
Right. You can't see the forest when you're smashed against the tree.
All right.
It gives you room to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You're working with your highest self, right? If we were to look at psychology in the sense of there's an ideal version of who we want to be, same principle of being our highest self. Who do you see yourself becoming, right? Who are you achieving to be? And what are these things that are creating limitations? And so that's what we're working with, is allowing you to step into your greatest version. And if you aren't able to see yourself from multiple lenses, we have blind spots. A lot of times we don't know the dialogue. We are unconscious. We're simply allowing our body to take us around in an unconscious state of memorized programs and patterns. And so therefore, this allows you to expand consciousness. And as you separate from your body and expand your awareness by becoming the observer of self, when you land back in your body or come back into self, you have a new awareness of even the physical body, which allows you to see some of these things that we've trained ourselves to do and be, right? We don't have to think about putting our pants on. It becomes unequivocally clear when we have little kids, right? How much it takes to teach them to do these ordinary things as a human being. We've memorized it. A perfect example is when we're driving. If we drive the same way to work every day, there's times where you don't even remember the drive. You just got to your destination. The body's on autopilot. And so if the body's on autopilot and it's being influenced by your environment, a lot of the times it's continuously sparking thoughts of the past from current feelings being reiterated from the environment. And in order to have a grasp of that, or to become aware that you're aware of the unconsciousness and the subconscious, right, we have to become conscious, or even more so. The river can only rise as high as its source. And so with this, it allows you to have new perspectives of your life. And then you can adjust accordingly.
Thank you. When working with trauma, like, why do you think ketamine is unique in that way, and helping people with traumatic memories, traumatic pasts, trauma stored in their bodies.
Yeah. Those initial imprints, again, coming into the limbic system, when we're able to shut that down temporarily, or dissolve it, I should say better, take the energy and the influence away, it gives the body an access point to surrender it, which is so incredible to witness, in the sense that you're able to allow this surrender to occur and that energy that's been stagnated in the physical body to be released. And it's happening in conjunction with a multitude of things. For some, they walk through their mind from a higher perspective, not from the victimization state. Meaning, if we're still being victimized by these memories and these intrusive thoughts and the repetitiveness of the trauma, that's all we're retraining our brain of those same things. We tell the same story. You'll hear people say, 30 years ago, this happened to me, and it's still their current reality. And in this, it's dissolving that relationship. It's making you aware of how much you are also saying it. And I would never diminish or deduce somebody's trauma or their story. However, it transitions to a point of wisdom after we're able to see that it happened to us and not because of us, especially early childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that empowers, that gives grace, that gives a place of informed awareness to retell and reestablish yourself with your story. That in itself is so beautiful. Even if we're able to shift it ever so slightly, it still starts shifting and moving, which then allows us to have relief.
Thank you for sharing that perspective, and especially with like early complex PTSD, when certain traumatic events happen before memories are formed, I've felt that ketamine really allows one to access those intrinsic memories that are stored in our bodies, that people through regular talk therapy just don't have access to. And so, yeah, I really love that you relayed that as well. So this next question, I wanted to ask you if you'd be willing to share a personal journey of yours with ketamine that was meaningful to you, and just see if that felt right to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is where in my practice is also retelling my story. Because of the ability to recognize that I was creating my own limitations with the way that I was showing up, doing all this work to still be able to reiterate, right? Earlier in, before I had kids, I was married to a man who I had both of my children with, who suffers from narcissism, and there was a period of my time where there was domestic violence patterned with battered wife syndrome. Looking back, is pretty textbook, as well as becoming a brand new mom, and really being scared to death to not know what to do, to be able to leave that situation, as well as what that looked like for the kids. I mean, there was a lot of things going on. And when my kids were 2 and 4 is when I was able to separate from this relationship, which resulted in a lot of self-destructive behaviors and patterns. I was still highly functioning professionally, Again, looking back in family history, my father suffered from alcoholism. Alcoholism was very prevalent in the generational line, and I was following suit. And so there came this time where a point of suffrage and rock bottom of consuming alcohol daily to avoid the feelings of this disruption at the core of my center, as well as being completely exhausted and a multitude, I mean, you can imagine, I experienced a spontaneous awakening from suffering, which catapulted my life into a direction that you see now. I stopped drinking and have been sober for years, and at that same time rebuilding myself. And this is a decade ago. And so fast forward, I put myself through my protocol. And that's one of the things that I make sure I do, in the sense that not only can I speak to the medicine, but I also know that it's attainable from being a busy professional as well as a single mom and all the other hats that are worn. And this last journey was very beautiful and powerful, and it opened up this area where it showed me the lifetimes that I had put into motion. If I had stayed married, and what that would have looked like, or the lifetime of self-sabotage and avoidance, or where have cancer would have manifested, or suicide perhaps being a means to an end. There was multitudes of areas where that came up, seeing cancer, seeing this addiction cycle, and just a shell of my being. It showed if I hadn't had chosen to take all of my life's work and create flow, to be able to give this opportunity back to people, to also redesign and to fall back in love with who they are, to sort through the unconsciousness and what it would have looked like if I would have stayed in my profession and not had made these choices, and where my life would have been. And if what I wouldn't have chose to take this walk with my kids, and for them to have this beautiful relationship and support as they've watched me create from all of my life experiences for Flow Forward. It was absolutely riveting in the sense of it allowed me to see truly how much has been accomplished, the things that have been overcome, and the beauty in all of it leading to here now, which really cleared the slate for the way that I show up for not only myself, but for others, from a place of knowingness, from the suffrage that is amongst us, right? I mean, you can feel it in the atmosphere. Earth is really bringing up a lot of these core wounds for us to heal. And being able to hold a torch to that, right? To have walked this walk and to be able to still come out on the other side and light the path for others who are trying to do the same thing or that are doing the same thing, to give them breathing room, to really allow this medicine to move them through themselves. It truly is, it's amazing. Every day, it's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much for your vulnerability and sharing something so personal and important to you in this recent journey. I appreciate that so much.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm circling back to what I think is really an amazing thing that you have created with Flow is talking about Anthea.
Yeah.
And so I got an email maybe a, it was like a couple of years ago, or maybe a year ago, from someone within Thea. And so I've signed up to hopefully be one of the providers that can offer it. But for the most part, at this time, insurance isn't covering ketamine-assisted psychotherapy in a lot of ways. And so I wanted you to like share like what's so exciting and what is Anthea with our listeners, because I think it's just going to be so wonderful and amazing for allowing people the opportunity to have access to this type of care.
Yeah, absolutely. They are the future for certainty. One thing that really separates them is that traditional insurance is a pay-to-play model. Right. As a provider, you have to be credentialed. And a lot of that is cost associated for you to fill out these applications to become a provider. And even then, they pick and choose what kind of reimbursement they give you. It's not consistent across the board, which is wild, but neither are the plans. Right. Whereas Entheia is free to providers. That's amazing. Their credentialing process is about 2 hours, and the due diligence that they put in allows for you to know whatever provider is credentialed by Entheia is licensed, is credible, and has gone through the background checks and the due diligence to make sure that there is a do no harm model. At that same time, they're giving access or this advantage to employers. So one, and I'm going to just use an example. I worked professionally and had a really beautiful Blue Shield coverage plan. It was probably close to $3,000 a month, and I used it 0 times. They must have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars for me to have this plan available. However, when you're healthy, you don't necessarily need it, right? And now, if there's an emergency or whatever else, so where does all that money go, right? Whereas Entheia, it empowers employers to provide a benefit to their employees and gives autonomy. So the employer, and I'll use Dr. Bronner's for example, they covered 100% of 100%. They also offered this to all the family members. Right now, it's shown that for every dollar spent from an employer on mental health, you have a $4 return. There's more times than not that coworkers or employees show up to work and they're in their own psychological warfare to where they're not productive because they can't be, because they're either stuck in a trauma loop or the impact of trauma has them in freeze. And so, with this, it gives access to those who still are showing up to work, regardless of the adversity, regardless of life, university, throwing all these lessons at us so that we can transcend this unconsciousness that keeps us in these trauma loops historically. You give access to families as well, too. And now you have an entire household who has access to this medicine, which is deducing suffering. Because otherwise, if you're a mom and you're at home and or you're at work and you don't know what's happening at home, or your kids are suffering, or the mental health crisis is compounding and you can't come up for air, it's burning us all out. We're going into autoimmunity. We're going into all of these shifts as a species because we're taxed exponentially. This hustle culture is not okay. And so, for employers to give this benefit or to provide this benefit, where there's no questions asked for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, there'll be no questions asked for MDMA as far as the employer side of it. Otherwise, we're trying to self-medicate. Entheia is the future in totality, to where they are the, where their floor is the ceiling of traditional insurance. This is for the greatest good of humanity. Period, with accessibility to the people, period, without these barriers of self-imposed entry of what's your deductible, and you didn't realize what plan you chose, that it doesn't cover anything other than if you get exploded on the side of the road. It's really unfortunate what insurance has done as a whole, as well as also giving this specialness. Right? Like if it's covered by insurance, people feel that it's safe. Also untrue.
Totally.
Completely, right? And it's just, it's a redesign, which I've also, building flow. So just a piece of this is that I've strapped this entire mission. I worked full time in creation to be able to support this build. And so as I've been doing such, you see the importance of giving access to this medicine. Otherwise, it becomes upper echelon or an expensive lift, right? And so my vision has been, how do we get this into insurance? Well, that's when Enthea found me, or we found each other in divine synchronicity, because our hearts and our visions are the same. It's to give access to the people safe and affordable.
Such a breath of fresh air in this industry that, like you said, has just been so corrupted, and is no longer serving the people in most need. So it's such a great partnership that you've have created there, and I can't wait to come on board with them, as well as I'm in the process of talking with Enthea. All right, Christy. Well, I usually finish the podcast with guests with a couple of just kind of like simple questions, but I wanted to make sure that there wasn't anything that we haven't talked about, or anything that you wanted to share with us that you feel is important to say.
It is in the encouragement to recognize that this medicine is medicine. Because it's atypical, I guess you could say initially, right? It's our due diligence to make this a common practice, to utilize this medicine, to speak freely of psychedelics, to inform our kids so that curiosity doesn't take their life because of some sort of crisis that's occurring on the streets with the corruption of drugs. It's really important that we have the courage to talk about our troubles and to seek help of alternative ways to allow this to assist us to transcend the unconsciousness of struggle. The more we talk about it openly, the more that we're able to show up for ourselves, we're going to pave the pathways for our kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's crucial to the mission. It really is.
Totally. Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, without further ado, I'll ask you some questions.
Yeah.
So, Christy, what is your favorite sound?
Oh, my goodness. It has to be. Joe Dispenza is one of my greatest teachers. My favorite sound would have to be the introduction of his meditations.
Right.
For sure. Absolutely.
Nice. Awesome. Yeah. So I'm also like a music producer on the side. Sometimes I joke that I'm a music producer trapped in a psychiatrist's body. So I make like music, and sometimes you can like see like where your music is being played. And for 1 week, like one of my tracks was being used in one of Joe Dispenza's like conferences or something. And so it was like, and I was like, what?
That's amazing. Congratulations.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. So I was like pretty.
Well, and your sound's pumped. One of my favorite sounds, man. Cause when it comes on, I spend daily out time with Joe.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. So I was very grateful that for some reason it said like London something something conference playlist for Joe Dispenza. And then one of my tracks was selected to be on there. So that's pretty cool.
Nicely done.
Yeah. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So on the opposite side of that, what would you say is your least favorite sound?
It would have to be like the sound of chewing with your mouth open. For sure.
Try hanging out with my 2-year-old.
I'm telling you. That's how you know it's your least favorite sound, because your kids will do it to you every single day until it triggers you deeply. You transcend it.
Totally. Awesome. So, Christy, if you could hang out with someone for an entire day from human history, who would it be and why?
It would be Dr. David Hawkins. He was one of the greatest influences in my journey of understanding consciousness, and the map of consciousness and the layers within. Brilliant man. That would be for sure. And the reason, in case Joe's listening, that I didn't choose Joe is because I believe that'll still happen in this lifetime.
No, fair answer. Awesome. Shout out to Dr. Hawkins.
Yes.
And then the last little question is it's kind of like a fill in the blank. The best part of being alive is.
That wasn't even a spontaneous answer. That was a contemplative answer. The best part of being alive is love.
Yes.
Yeah.
Always.
Always. And the ability to reach that. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Awesome, Christy. Well, it's been such an honor and a pleasure to be with you in this moment. And thank you so much for sharing your amazing mind and your amazing thoughts with us. And your knowledge is so deep. And so it's been wonderful speaking with you.
Yeah, same. I appreciate your time.
If people want to find your work, like where should people go online to check out your work and what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. You can definitely go to our website, which is flowintegrativeketamine.com, and sign up for our newsletter. That keeps you informed for sure. You can find us on LinkedIn as well. And then I actually am going live with my first course in ketamine on May 10th, for providers. It offers 6 hours of CEs. And you can find that online as well.